That's pretty. Morning. So first, let me show you. Isn't this beautiful? These are the stoles that our chaplains will wear. And as of today, each chaplain has his or her own stole to wear. These were handmade by Jan Govain and Susan Cranshaw. It took a long time. And no two are quite alike on this colorful side. The other side is this blue. I just think they're beautiful. So the chaplains plan to wear their stoles every Sunday, whether they are on official prayer duty or not. So whenever you see someone with this stole on, you feel free to ask them for prayer. It's one-on-one, it's confidential, and they'll do it anywhere in the building that you happen to see them. So thank you, Jan and Susan. Our lives are full of prophets. A prophet takes a snapshot of a fork in the road and then describes what awaits on each path. We hear this a lot from politicians. Our country's on the wrong track. If we continue down this road, we're doomed. But there's hope. Elect me. I'll pull us on to the better path and the future will be rosy. I mean, that's the Old Testament prophets used that same template. Although they didn't claim they had the power to make life better, but God could do that. We think of them as prophets of doom, foretelling the future, but they were also prophets of hope. They desperately wanted to shake up the status quo, to alert people that they'd forgotten to put God first and to warn them about dangers to come if they didn't change their ways. And they constantly reassured the people that God's love and power were always available. The people might have been disobedient, but they were never abandoned. It didn't really matter whether people believed the prophets or heeded their warnings. The prophets had done their part by speaking for the Lord. One of the best Old Testament prophets is Ezekiel. He had visions, wild visions. Some of the language from the book of Ezekiel is also in Revelation. Some scholars believe Ezekiel served as an outline for the book of Revelation. Ezekiel was called to be a prophet when he saw four wheels in the sky with living creatures steering them. There's a song, Ezekiel saw the wheel. He was also involved with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You remember them from Sunday school? They were thrown into the fiery furnace. I didn't know this until this week. I'm going to digress just because this is interesting. Before the furnace, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came to the prophet Ezekiel, and they said, "We're thinking about defying King Nebuchadnezzar and refusing to worship his golden idol, but we know we might be killed for that." So they asked Ezekiel to check in with God to see whether God would save them. Ezekiel did that, and God said, "No promises." Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego left disappointed, but they talked about it some more and decided they would defy the king anyway, even if it cost their lives. Ezekiel, meanwhile, was really annoyed with God about this. He kept talking to God after they left. He said, "These are good guys." And God said, "I won't abandon them. But what would be the point if they knew that in advance? It's easy to stick to your beliefs if you know you'll be spared any consequences." So you know the rest of the story. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were thrown into the furnace, which was burning seven times hotter than usual. Nebuchadnezzar looked in the furnace, I guess to watch them burn, and saw not three men, but four. God was with them. They weren't hurt. Nebuchadnezzar finally let them out of the furnace and was very impressed with their God. The most famous of the Ezekiel stories, however, is the Valley of Dry Bones. Dim bones, dim bones, dim dry bones. As with all Bible interpretation, we ask first, what was happening at the time? This was nearly 600 years before Jesus was born. What is now Israel was constantly being conquered by other countries. So in 598 BC, Nebuchadnezzar of the Neo-Babylonian Empire seized Judah in the south, which included Jerusalem. He rounded up about 3,000 Jews and sent them to live in Babylonia. Ezekiel was one of those Jews. He was about 25 at the time. He was already a prophet, and he kept warning them that things would only get worse. Sure enough, 11 years later, Jerusalem was completely destroyed, along with the Jewish temple. Thousands more exiles were brought to Babylonia. Ezekiel, to his credit, did not say, "I told you so." Well, he might have, but he didn't stop there. He understood how devastating this was to the Jews. Forced out of the land that they believed God had promised to Abraham, and forced away from their temple where they believed God actually lived, and then to have the temple destroyed, they were desolate. They were also in a new land with new customs and different gods, and they began to assimilate. Now, in this country, we think it's a good thing when immigrants learn the language and adopt American customs. Some people even want them to become Christian if they're not already. It's okay to keep some of their colorful traditions or open restaurants to serve their ethnic food. We just don't want them to be fanatics about keeping to the old ways. You're here now, you should adapt. Well, Ezekiel was a fanatic about keeping to the old ways. He feared the Jews were losing their identity. He kept urging them to follow God's laws as Moses handed them down and stick together, because he said they would go home someday. The temple would be rebuilt. He was already having visions of the new temple. But they started worshiping other gods in Babylonia. After all, their God had let them down. Why keep up Jewish ways if God hadn't saved them from exile? So much for being the chosen people. Ezekiel believed they had been exiled as punishment for not following God's laws. And that is the primary message of the whole Old Testament. Obey God and you're blessed. Disobey God and you're cursed. But God never goes away. So through Ezekiel, God made a touching promise of forgiveness. He said, "I'll take you from the nations and gather you from all the countries and bring you into your own land. I will sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your uncleannesses, and from all your idols I will cleanse you. A new heart I will give you, and a new spirit I will put within you. Then you shall live in the land that I gave to your ancestors, and you shall be my people, and I will be your God." So it's in this context of destruction and exile, but a very close relationship with God, that Ezekiel had a vision. I'm reading from The Message. Do you know this version of the Bible? I'll tell you, because so many of you ask me what versions I'm using. A Presbyterian minister and theology professor named Eugene Peterson took the original Greek and translated it into modern-day American English. He says the Bible was not written in a formal language. The people of its day would have understood immediately what it meant. That's why they were so excited about it. Whereas we have to work to understand it. So Peterson spent years translating it himself. He finished the whole Bible in 2002. He's still around. He's retired in Montana. So this is Ezekiel telling about his vision. And it's longer than I usually read to you, but it's such a great story. He starts out, "God grabbed me. God's Spirit took me up and set me down in the middle of an open plain strewn with bones. He led me around and among them, a lot of bones. There were bones all over the plain, dry bones, bleached by the sun. He said to me, 'Son of man,'" which means human being, fella, guy, "'Son of man, can these bones live?' And I said, 'Master God, only you know that.' He said to me, 'Prophesy over these bones.'" Now, to prophesy doesn't just mean to tell the future. It means to speak with divine inspiration, to speak based on your mystical knowledge, what you have received from God. "He said to me, 'Prophesy over these bones, dry bones. Listen to the message of God. God the Master told the dry bones, watch this. I'm bringing the breath of life to you, and you'll come to life. I'll attach sinews to you and put meat on your bones and cover you with skin and breathe life into you. You'll come alive and you'll realize that I am God. So Ezekiel says, I prophesied just as I'd been commanded. As I prophesied, there was a sound and rustling. The bones moved and came together, bone to bone. I kept watching. Sinews formed, tendons, then muscles on the bones, then skin stretched over them, but they had no breath in them. And God said to me, prophesy to the breath. Prophesy, son of man, tell the breath. God the Master says, come from the four winds. Come, breath, breathe on these slain bodies. Breathe life. So I prophesied, just as he commanded me. The breath entered them and they came alive. They stood up on their feet, a huge army. Then God said to me, son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. Listen to what they're saying. Our bones are dried up. Our hope is gone. There's nothing left of us. Therefore prophesy, tell them, God the Master says, I'll dig up your graves and bring you out alive, O my people. Then I'll take you straight to the land of Israel. When I dig up graves and bring you out as my people, you'll realize that I am God. I'll breathe my life into you, and you'll live. Then I'll lead you straight back to your land, and you'll realize that I am God. I've said it, and I'll do it. God's decree. Whoa. It seems to me that human beings have always been fascinated with the idea of the dead coming back to life. Whether it's the glorious resurrection of Jesus, or Dr. Frankenstein reanimating a body, or the walking dead, we love this stuff. I believe it's because deep down, we know that physical death is not the end. We keep living, and we keep telling that story in various ways, in every culture, and in every period of history. So, the prophet Ezekiel's in this field of dry bones. If you saw a field of human bones, you would know something terrible happened there. It's a hopeless image. It would seem to be irreversible. It's symbolic, but not subtle. The Jews felt dead to themselves and life as they knew it. They were forced out of their homeland, and it was destroyed behind them, even the temple. There was nothing to go back to. I always remembered this story as God magically pulling the bones back together and making them walk around. But that's not quite what happened, is it? God said to me, Ezekiel, prophesy over these bones. Dry bones, listen to the message of God. Traditional Bibles say, hear the word of the Lord. Ezekiel says, I prophesied just as I'd been commanded. As I prophesied, the bones moved and came together, bone to bone. Ezekiel had a role to play. He was talking to those bones the whole time that they were reconnecting into bodies, in skeletons and then becoming bodies, but they weren't breathing yet. And God said to me, prophesy to the breath. Tell the breath, God the Master says, come from the four winds. Come, breath, breathe on these slain bodies, breathe life. So I prophesied, spoke with divine inspiration, just as he commanded me. The breath entered them and they came alive. They stood up on their feet, a huge army. Ezekiel plays a crucial role here. This is an image of co-creation. We don't get to just sit back while God handles everything. Ezekiel first kept prophesying, or affirming, that the bones were coming together. He spoke the truth. He held a vision of what would happen and watched as it unfolded. Then he called forth the breath, the animating force of life. If we're not breathing, we're not alive. A beating heart and drawing breath keep us alive, and we're really not sure how either one works. But humans have known for thousands of years that God breathes us. Breath is woven into our language for the divine. Ruach is the Hebrew word for spirit. You have to breathe to say it. Ruach. It appears 389 times in the Old Testament. Allah, Yahweh, God. You have to breathe to say the name. Spiritus, Latin for spirit, means breath. Ancient people knew the breath was more than just air in motion. It was the divine presence in us as human beings. So we talk about someone drawing his last breath. And we celebrate the first cry of a baby. It's breathing, it's alive. Come from the four winds, come breath, breathe life. Life is one of our 12 divine powers. It's more than physical life. It's one of the divine attributes we each carry into this human experience. It's the animating life of the divine. You know, energy can't be destroyed or created. It only takes different forms. The life force cannot be destroyed, but it has to be directed. It is divine potential that requires intention. Life is the evolutionary impulse, always pushing us to grow, to explore, to be more, do more. But raw life energy does not have intelligence. It needs wisdom, faith, and understanding. We direct it with our thoughts and words. And that's what Ezekiel was doing with these bones. That's what we do anytime we deliberately create what we want in our lives. We direct the life force. We wield the animating power. God is the power, but we point it in the direction of our thoughts. That is some serious responsibility. So what do we learn from a field of dry bones? First, to look past appearances. Those bones were dead. This story is about breathing eternal spirit into the appearance of lack or death. It's about bringing life energy into expression. And second, we have work to do. Ezekiel was told what was possible for these bones. He held the vision until he saw results, which is exactly what we're taught to do whenever we want to manifest something in our lives. Then at God's direction, he called forth breath. He spoke the word. He opened the way for the divine life force to enter those bodies. We get out of the way too and call upon the power of the divine. Doesn't mean we just wait for God to do everything. We have responsibilities and our own power. But we also can't do it alone. Creating our lives is a partnership with the divine. And you can think of the divine as God, Jesus, angels, ascended masters, the Buddha, your higher self, or just a generic higher power. We don't make a move without it, whatever you call it, whether we're aware of it or not. God is breathing us, living us. We're using divine energy to create our lives. We have free will to do whatever we want. We can think and say whatever we want, but it works better when we work in concert with the highest powers we can reach. We have to believe in ourselves as much as we believe in spirit. We have to do more than wish for what we want. The energy of life is available, but it waits for us to claim it, to have faith in it, and move forward at its direction. So for us, this story is about our innate creative power. We're here as spiritual beings to make choices that ideally will improve ourselves and our world, and eventually bring about the kingdom of heaven right here, a new golden age. So what is the field of bones in your life right now? What are you looking at and saying, there's no hope here? Obviously, there's nothing left. As the new year begins, what would you like to bring to life? Not what you burned up in the burning bowl. You can let that go. But there might be something else that you thought had died. Maybe a talent you really haven't practiced since childhood. Maybe a friendship that has just died from neglect. You might want to try to bring it back to life or create something new. You can't do it alone, but you also can't wait for supernatural intervention from God. It's co-creation, and we make the first move. So be open to a vision. Let Spirit show you what's possible. Follow your guidance. Then prophesy, Son of Man. Speak the word of divine inspiration. Know that the power of life flows through you with every breath. And with God, all things are possible. So let's take these thoughts into meditation with Kit.
So let's take a conscious, deep, life-giving breath. Consciously direct your breath deeply in, fully in, and then fully, completely out. Press all of that air from your lungs, from your diaphragm. And take one more deep, conscious breath. And then just relax and let your breathing return to its normal rhythm. Yourself to relax into that place where wisdom resides, where it comes in, open at the top. Focus on the third eye between your eyebrows. And allow yourself to drift into that field, that plain, that meadow. Under wide open sky, and everywhere you look around you, that field of bones, there will be one or many that will stand out for you. Allow your inner eye to be drawn. You may feel a little apprehension. If you do, just breathe into it. You know these bones, they are your long forgotten or long tucked away ideas or dreams. They have not died. You have simply let them get dried and bleached with the busyness and of your life. But in your mind's eye, pick up one of those bones. Allow the memory to come back. Allow that idea. And greater still, allow that possibility. That bone is pure potential. to tell you its name if it hasn't already. Then breathe that divine energy, that divine power that you are right now. Divine, divine energy and power that you are, the power to move mountains, the power to resurrect that which will give you more life. Breathe deeply into that I am. Release that I am softly to yourself. I am. And then release it into this room. I am. Take a very, very deep cleansing breath. Release it into this room. Gently bring yourself back. Back into this place of gratitude. Back to this room full of divine love. And with one more great big deep cleansing breath, let's release this into the hallelujah.